This is PCJ Radio International.
Radio Berlin International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Well, hello everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. I'm Keith Perron. We begin first in Fiji. Fiji's Media Industry Development Authority, or MIDA, has restricted international media from conducting workshops locally on issues including media freedom, democracy, human rights, and the election, without first seeking the authority's approval. Under the new measure, all overseas media, freelancers, and communications workers, including those associated with NGOs, will have to be registered. To find out more, here's Mary Baines.
The new chair of the authority, Eshwin Raj, says a foreign entity should not be able to come into Fiji and conduct workshops without its permission.
When you are making comments very, very specific to a country and its government and its people, I think the authority needs to be informed. The whole sort of kind of willy-nilly sort of going in, making random statements, walking away is something that I want to put a tab on. I'm particularly concerned about parachute journalism, when journalists just come in for 5 minutes without really entering the protocols of the place.
Mr. Raj says foreign media outlets making unbalanced claims about Fiji should be held to account and report in a fair, balanced and accurate way.
The point is that one needs to be a lot more responsible. I think the whole sort of kind of romantic notion of freedom and unrestricted freedom without any sense of responsibility is something which is deeply problematic.
MIDA is organising its own workshops on the constitution, media decree, election and self-regulation for all Fijian media outlets in November and December. The Fiji regional coordinator of the journalist network Pacific Freedom Forum, Ricardo Morris, says people are questioning how they can extend the regulation to foreign media doing training. But he says Fiji journalists and media operators have dealt with a different media environment than elsewhere for some time, and from MIDA's perspective, it's time to include everyone. He says MIDA is exercising the power given to it under the Media Decree of 2010.
The powers of the Media Industry Development Authority have always been outlined in the Media Decree, but now that they have a new and a full-time director in place and they have a chairman back in the seat, things seem to be moving along and authority seems to be exercising these powers that it's been given.
The Pacific Media Assistance Scheme, or PACMAS, which has carried out media workshops in Fiji in the past, would not comment on the issue. Its program manager, Francis Herman, says it has not received details from MIDA directly. A local media NGO which advocates for freedom of expression and communication, Fiji Media Watch, says it does not believe it needs to be registered. Its executive director, Agatha Foray, says the group intends to continue running workshops throughout the country to prepare for next year's election.
Our workshops, our visits to the communities will continue, and we will advocate for freedom of expression and opinion by citizens. At the same time, we will promote the independence of reporters to be able to report independently what they feel or think needs to be reported to people.
Ms. Foray says the media decree, which includes jail terms and fines, is a threat to journalists, and she hopes it can be reviewed. She says a fully independent body made up of media professionals should be formed to regulate the media without any state intervention. This is Mary Baines.
Mm-hmm. Before we move to our next item, I just want to tell you about some program changes to the relay of Media Network Plus on the World Radio Network. This is for the B13 schedule. For Africa, Asia Pacific, effective October 27th, Media Network Plus will be at 15 hours UTC. For Europe, effective October 27th, 10 hours UTC. And for North America, a week later, beginning November 3rd, we're going to be moving to 18 hours UTC. And you can find all the details, of course, at our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. Now, a few months ago, we did an interview with Andy Sennett, who was with Radio Netherlands for a number of years, including the World Radio TV Handbook. Over the past few months, we've been bringing you parts of that interview, and today we bring you the final installment. This time, Andy will be talking about, well, what it was like at Radio Netherlands in the final days, and what the future holds.
I was hoping to get more time to explore outside. Travel to bits of the Netherlands I've never actually seen, despite having lived here for 25 years. But I'm certainly not itching to get back into it. In fact, in some ways, I'm, you know, the longer it goes on, the more glad I am that I got out when I did. I retired, actually, decided to leave on the 1st of May, and that was before people had been told whether or not they were going to be made redundant. But I gather the atmosphere deteriorated, obviously, you know, when once people knew that they weren't going to be kept on. So, you know, I'm glad I didn't have to experience all that, because, frankly, I have a lot of respect for a lot of the people I work with. And I think, you know, they've been very shabbily treated, the way they've just been told to get lost by the government.
I'm just wondering, I mean, for example, with the various language sections, where you had, let's say, people that moved to the Netherlands maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, but now the service is being cut. What's happening with them?
Well, this is a good point. For example, we had a lot of the Arab section was, obviously the Arab world is quite complicated, and just as we did at BBC Monitoring, the Arab team consists of Arabs from a lot of different countries. So that, as far, you know, there was somebody with experience of most of the main Arab countries on the side. They have come here specifically to work for Radio Netherlands, and of course, a lot of them have been made redundant, and they now have to be, you know, probably go back to their home countries to find work. The same with the Chinese.
You know, but Andy, what about, for example, in situations where, let's say, they came from China to work for the Chinese section, or they came from the Middle East to work for the Arabic section? Aren't they now in the kind of position that if they go back to their home countries, it could be difficult for them because of stories that they've reported on?
Yes, absolutely. And this is something that you know, Radio Netherlands was very much aware of. And, you know, because I'm not sort of close friend with anybody in those sections, although I know some of them. I knew some of them to say hello to in the corridor. You know, I think they spent a great deal of time trying to find out, you know, how each person, each individual was going to be affected, and trying to work out the best possible solution for them. So I don't actually know, you know, what's happening to the ones who have left. And hopefully, you know, they'll either find jobs with other international broadcasters or other jobs as translators or journalists, where they're not faced with the prospect of going back and being arrested.
Have any Radio Netherlands journalists been threatened with arrest?
Oh, yes. We've had quite a few of sometimes we haven't always publicized it. We've had people go undercover into Burma and other places where, you know, we're not supposed to be allowed to report from. And, yeah, we've had quite a few journalists have been arrested over time. But fortunately, we haven't had anybody killed or seriously injured, as far as I'm aware. But, you know, it does happen. And that's one of the things that the journalists have to put up with. One of the nice things about working at Radio Netherlands was the opportunity to meet young journalists from different parts of the world who were attending courses at the training center. And talking to these young journalists from Africa, and they say, yeah, I've been beaten up quite in a run-of-the-mill sort of way. It's something that's perfectly natural to them to get beaten up because you're a journalist. And I honestly don't think that a lot of journalists who don't travel the world understand that, this, you know.
I know that Ginger De Silva has been very busy working in that section at Radio Netherlands. That section of Radio Netherlands and television, is that also being affected by the cuts, or are these two departments funded separately?
Well, it's interesting. The training center is funded separately, and that is going to continue. And it's going to change its name, because what they've done, they also had in the same building several NGOs which were doing media work, and they've all got together and they form one organization now to be more efficient and use the government's money more efficiently. And Ginger is still there, and hopefully that will continue for many, many years to come. As far as the television service is concerned, I understand, yeah, the government has agreed that should continue. The arguments have been the public broadcasters don't want to take over running it. So at the moment, it's still under the control of the Radio Netherlands. I don't actually know what has happened, and I haven't read anything about it so far. So I guess people are still talking.
The decision concerning Radio Netherlands and this budget cut, could this, I mean, by luck, could this decision be reversed? I mean, if we take, let's say, Radio Canada International, Wojtek Wjazda, who's the head of the RCI Action Committee, is still optimistic that the decision for RCI could be reversed.
Keith, I don't think it's really, really practical here, because all the political parties in government and in opposition agree that there have to be some major cuts. The Netherlands had to fulfil certain conditions laid down by the EU in terms of how much money the country owes and so on, and they're having to find every last way of saving money. And in fact, rather pessimistically, we think that there was a better chance of the budget being cut further than it being increased again. And of course, the other thing is that all the people who've left have, those who are still young enough to find other work will move on to other jobs, and there simply won't be the personnel. However, it was announced a couple of weeks ago that the Dutch language website is going to continue under private funding. And so that's something positive for Dutch expats, that they will still be a source of Dutch news online, which they can access. The Dutch newspapers have websites, but the Dutch newspapers, their mentality is very much a Dutch domestic audience, and they don't always understand that if you're an expat and maybe only look at the news once or twice a week, you need more background on the stories, and that's something that the people on the Dutch website have obviously been specialized in.
Now you just said a moment ago that more cuts could happen. Is that something that really could? I mean, when I was discussing this with someone not too long ago, he also worked at Swiss Radio International with Bob Zanotti, but he worked in the French service. And he said to me he kind of feels that Radio Netherlands is going the way of Swiss Radio International, and he suspects that in a few years from now, they're just going to keep cutting, and then eventually say, you know what, oh, 2 million euros, there's no point, we'll just get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way that's going. I mean, I've discussed this a lot with Jonathan Marks, who, as you know, used to be on the management at Radio Netherlands, who was program director and creative director. Jonathan is now a renowned consultant, and he fears that this is just the first step towards a thing being ended completely. If in a few years' time the single mandate they now have, which is to focus on countries with press freedom problems, if that has been shown not to have had any effect, then, of course, there will be justification for saying, okay, we'll close the whole thing down.
You see, I know, for example, at Radio Sweden, what I was told when Radio Sweden left HF, they said, you know, the Swedish government would like to do away with Radio Sweden, but the problem is the labor laws in Sweden are very strict. There's a lot of staff. So you know what? We'll keep them on because many of them are retiring in about 5 years.
Yes, they're absolutely right, Keith.
You know, so just keep it going for 5 years. It's a lot cheaper than just, you know, paying out, you know, redundancy packages. And then after that, oh, we'll just cut it down, you know, shut it down.
Well, I was told in confidence, so I won't name the person who told me, but somebody who works there, that indeed that is going to be the case. And the English, the German section already stopped radio programs because some of them retired and there were only four people left and they couldn't produce a half-hour radio program 7 days a week. But the English department had a larger number of staff, but quite a few of them are going to come up to retiring age around the same time. And indeed, what will happen is that they will not not hire new people to replace them. Mm-hmm. And there will come a point at which they too will say, we can no longer produce our full programs. And we'll cut it down to, say, 5-day-a-week podcasts of shorter duration.
In RCI situation is that, unlike Radio Netherlands, that more or less had the budget come from the same place for many years, RCI's budget was always bouncing around from one department to the next, to the next, to the next. And I contacted the head engineers at Sackville after RCI did their final broadcast and said, look, I know that you have now a lot of time available. How much are you willing to rent some time out? I'm looking, you know, for a few hours here, a few hours here. And he said, you know, if it was up to him, he would rent the time out immediately. But they got a memo from Ottawa, from the CBC in Ottawa, saying, any of the broadcasters left, tell them to move. Tell them to move before October 31st. We want them out of there. And if they can't find a new home, you know, in time, we're just going to turn them off. We want everything to shut down.
But I do have some good news from our Madagascar relay, because that was a problem as well, because we have about 30-plus staff in Madagascar, and their employment doesn't come under Dutch employment law, obviously, because they're citizens of Madagascar. And they have been able to form their own company and will continue to operate the relay station there as a private company, at least for the foreseeable future. And as you may know, we do have a lot of other broadcasters using Madagascar. In fact, even before the budget cuts, the majority of hours transmitted from Madagascar were non-Radio Netherlands hours. So that will help. And of course, it's also good news for Voice of the People, which broadcasts into Zimbabwe, because they will not have to change on transmitter sites.
What about Bonaire? What's happening with Bonaire?
Bonaire will unfortunately close. Bonaire is in a different situation because it had actually been decided that we would close Bonaire even before the last the big budget cut, and the reason is the decreasing audience in North America. There is still an audience in Latin America, but that can also be served by transmitters elsewhere. The French Guiana transmitter site, has taken a lot of potential business away from Bonaire. Also, Bonaire was, we were hoping to have a lot of transmissions from the closed transmitter site at Greenville, mm-hmm. in North America. And of course, that was reversed at the very last minute. So a lot of the business that we were hoping would come to Bonaire didn't come to Bonaire. So there simply isn't enough left to continue it. The staff there, they were told at the beginning of 2011, they were given well over 18 months notice. Although they were sad, I have to say most of them understood. We had our people from Hilversum went over there from the distribution department, went over there and had them all around the table and explained exactly what the situation is, and they understand. So it's sad, but, it's inevitable.
Now, Andy, there's something that I'm curious about. I mean, if you have, let's say, these big stations like Radio Netherlands or RCI, and they have these relays, why don't, let's say, they take their relay sites, I mean, like with the one that we're doing, and turn it into a commercial operation?
Well, because I don't think there's enough business now. Most of the shortwave sites that I can think of are not running at full capacity. And really, you know, to make a site viable, you have to have the transmitters turned on for quite a few hours a day. Otherwise, you know, because the infrastructure, the cost of providing all the buildings and the heating and so on, and is still the same whether you're on the air for 2 hours or for 12 hours, and it's simply a matter of you know, being efficient. And I think what would have helped if more broadcasters had got together and decided to share transmitter sites rather than try and you know, keep their own going. But of course, a lot of the transmitter sites now are not owned by the broadcasters; they're owned by private relay companies.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in Singapore, every time I go, there's one station I visit. That's the BBC Far East Relay Station in Singapore. And the head engineer, Tam Lan Sun, who's been there for years, I asked him a question. I said, you know, with all the cuts happening in shortwave, including the BBC, which is your main output here, how has this infected the amount of hours that you put out? During a 24-hour period, they only have a downtime of 1 hour.
Yes, well, that's efficient. I mean, obviously, that site is unquestionably being run efficiently, but you know, some of them are only running at less than 50% capacity, mm-hmm. and yet to cover if the trend, you know, some are possibly are cutting out night shifts and only broadcasting you know day shift hours, which will cut down on personnel costs, but if you have you know, stations which are on the air for a few hours at the night and a few hours in the day and a few hours in the evening, you still need three shifts to cover it. So you know, your personnel costs can't really be reduced very much.
Yeah, he said to me the most difficult time that they have is every time they have to do maintenance. Who do they shut down? What do they have to juggle around? And he says it's insane. You know, the day that I went there the first time, it was around... Oh, it was around like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They had every single transmitter except for the 350 kilowatts on the air.
Yeah, that's good.
And they don't just go out for 1 hour at a time. You're talking about like 6 hour blocks. Turn off for a bit, change frequency, and back on the air. I mean, it's just insane. Let's move, actually, you know, speaking of Southeast Asia, a question that I had from a listener not too long ago on Media Network Plus was, how is it a country like Sri Lanka that is poor can maintain Ekala, and now they've taken over the SLBC has taken over the old Deutsche Welle site in Trincomalee and have added SLBC numbers on the air? How come they say a country like the Netherlands just can't afford it? But we can hear.
Well, frankly, let's be honest, I don't think they can afford it. I mean, I understand that the SLBC is in deeply in financial trouble. But because of the Sri Lankan government regarding SLBC as its mouthpiece, you know, they just keep pouring money into it. If the SLBC was run as, you know, a commercial operation, they would have to close down a lot of what they do. In fact, in the past, they have close down some services to save money, but you know, I don't think the fact that you see some countries broadcasting or having a lot of shortwave facilities still on the air doesn't necessarily mean that they can afford it. It just means that their government thinks that it's necessary.
Final last words from yourself. I'm going to hand the mic over to you. Final last words for, well, anybody and anything you want to say on all the years that you've spent in international broadcasting, not just working at the broadcasting side or the World Radio TV Handbook or BBC monitoring, or as just some little kid in England with headsets, you know, making sure that his mother doesn't realize he's listening to Voice of Russia and Radio Moscow and all these other communist stations. What final words would you have? You have the platform.
Well, I'm going to end with a probably really think is a corny joke, but I'll do it anyway. I think one of the greatest things for me has been the number of people from different parts of the world that have become friends, and people I've had contact with professionally and then personally. As I said earlier in the interview, I've had Victor Gunatilica coming to stay with me, and I'm a very close friend of him and his family. There are many other people, far too numerous to mention. And, you know, international broadcasting has given all that to me. And I think it was summed up by British comedian Tony Hancock in a sketch he did in the 1950s, and then I think again on television in the 1960s. He said, wonderful hobby, amateur radio, but it can also apply to any sort of radio. I've got friends all over the world. And he paused and said, no friends around here, but friends all over the world. You know, and that's how I feel. Fortunately, I do have friends around here, and, you know, I'm very lucky in that regard. So, but this idea of racism, I don't know, this is something that keeps cropping up. What is racism? You know, to me, it's a concept I don't understand, because I don't look at the color of somebody's skin. I talk to them and look upon them as individuals. And I've learned so much from friends from Asia and from Africa and, you know, different parts of the world that I just can't imagine how I could ever be regarded as racist.
And that was the final installment of our lengthy conversation with Andy Sennett. Pretty soon we're going to be uploading the complete, unedited version of that full interview, and you'll be able to find it at our website, pcjmedia.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and also on Facebook to find out when we're going to be doing that. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Well, it's now time for Dan Hansley and this week's propagation forecast.
Here's propagation for the week from October 19th to October 25th, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux starting out on October 19th at 115, down to 110, down to 105 from October 21st to October 23rd, 100 October 24th and 25th. The A index this week starts out at 5 on October 19th and 20th, spiking to 10 on October 21st. From there, October 22nd to October 25th, an A index of 5. The KP index is 2 on October 19th and 20th, up to 4 October 21st. From October 22nd to October 25th, a KP index of 2. 10 sunspots, most extremely close to each other and almost overlapping, are present this week. 1857 and 61 through 71 are observed, with sunspot AR-1865 showing us a beta-gamma-delta magnetic field that harbors energy for X-class solar flares. There's a coronal hole this week, which will be sending us solar winds by October 20th to the 21st.
And for more information on Dan Hansley's propagation forecast, you can find out more, I should say, at the propagation page at pcjmedia.com. Just go to www.pcjmedia.com and you'll see a link for it on the top of the page. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies. Ha da yugal gastramare.